Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we take our freedom back and make freedom a reality, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing, and I'm telling you, there is a lot going on in the world today, and we're going to try to get through most of it. It's like chaos in the world right now. It's just absolutely unbelievable, all of the different things that are kind of falling apart or falling into place in some cases, I guess. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So let's get started. On the international front, once again, massive deployment of U.S. naval assets to the South China Sea. Finally, the mainstream media has acknowledged this. The UK Mirror came out with it first, and then there was actually an editorial from China Daily News, the communist propaganda arm of China, saying that the U.S. is focused on the wrong enemy, quote unquote. And they've only acknowledged that two carrier groups are down in the South China Sea, when it really appears there are actually three, if not four. And they did acknowledge that that was unusual to put that many carrier groups in the South China Sea. Folks, continue to watch this, kind of flying under the radar right now. No pun intended. On the international front as well, everybody looking at what is going to happen in Britain. And very interesting what's been going on. Very interesting what's been going on there. First of all, some polling places were ordered to take down British flags. Some places were requiring pencil marks versus pens. Obviously, one permanent, one not. And right now, UKIP's leader, Nigel Farage, has come out and said that they think that the Leave campaign may barely lose. Now, the Leave campaign was ahead until the horrible tragedy of the MP being murdered in cold blood there in England. And then that was used against the Leave campaign. But it is so close that they don't even have exit polls right now, which really, honestly, it makes me wonder if there's not some manipulation going on, because typically there are exit polls, and the excuse they used was, we don't know if we can be that accurate. Well, how have you been accurate in the past with your exit polls? It doesn't make sense. So let's keep our eyes on Britain. Right now, Nigel Farage has come out and said that he thinks that they may barely lose and that Brexit will not happen. Very interesting. He also said that UKIP is not going away anytime soon. So this is, you know, first they had the independence movement in Scotland, now this. And the globalists, the one world globalists, are losing control over their little baby over there with the European Union. Either way, Europe is in a bad way. If Britain left now, it would just mean the day of reckoning would be sooner. And probably not as bad. But if Britain does stay, it just means that they're delaying the inevitable, as we have talked about on this show many times. Also on the international front, the Russian government hacked the Clinton Foundation. I don't know what's going on with their security, but anyway, the bottom line is that Russians have hacked it, and that can only mean a couple of things. I think it means that they really are concerned that she might actually win, and maybe the Russians don't want Hillary Clinton. I don't know. But we need to keep our eyes on this one as well, because this is happening more and more in very targeted attacks, not just of the Clinton Foundation, but of Hillary's emails, etc. Which brings us to the national front. Hillary Clinton still not in jail after two inspectors general coming out and saying what she did was against the law, after a report coming out saying what she did was against the law, after the FBI has admitted that there is a criminal investigation going on, and yet nothing is happening. I got to tell you, folks, if this was me or you, this was any ordinary soldier in the military, we'd already be in jail. We'd already be in jail. And this wasn't something that was, you know, some minor transgression. I mean, you're talking national secrets now. So I'm going to keep bringing this up until she's in court. Also on the national front, the Southern Poverty Law Center, back in the news again in a very unfavorable way. They got debunked again. There was the House Democrats decided, this is in Washington, D.C., decided that they were going to examine, quote, right-wing domestic terrorism, end quote, and specifically in relation to public lands in the West. Well, the Republican leadership over there said, you know, this is ridiculous. You guys are just trying to drum stuff up. Well, anyway, the Southern Poverty Law Center shows up at this thing, and their president, Richard Cohen, says the following, quote, many on the anti-government side believe that county sheriffs are the highest authority in the land, an idea rooted in a racist anti-Semitic ideology that gained traction during the farm crisis in the 1970s, end quote. The only problem with that statement, and once again, the Southern Poverty Law Center, literally that was completely made up and is a demonstrable lie, literally said that thinking that most people aren't going to do fact-checking. Well, the fact of the matter is that actually the sheriff being the highest authority in a county comes from actually Alfred the Great in the 870s. In fact, sheriffs were mentioned in the Magna Carta in 1215. And throughout English and American history have constantly, consistently, and irrefutably been recognized as the chief law enforcement officer of a county. In fact, the United States Supreme Court has even recognized that as fact in Prince v. U.S., Sheriff Richard Mack's case. So Southern Poverty Law Center, once again, a hateful socialist anti-constitution organization being debunked. And we're going to keep doing this. They keep throwing this stuff out there, trying to demonize people. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. History is pretty clear on that issue. Also on the national front, Herb Titus, a great constitutional scholar, professor. I've met him before, one of the smartest guys I know, came out with a great article talking about Obama's threat to defund school districts over the transgender bathroom issue, saying that that entire threat actually is illegal. And he's right. It was not done according, the rule that Obama's talking about was not done according to the Administrative Procedures Act, just like happened here in Washington State, where the Human Rights Commission failed miserably. They failed to post online, failed to provide a meaningful opportunity for comment, and then put the rule into effect the day after Christmas, December 26th. Well, the Obama administration wholesale just went around the Administrative Procedures Act and tried to make this some sort of a policy guidance. And then Obama's threatening to defund. He can't do that because it's a policy guidance. It would only be in effect to those agencies. It couldn't be in effect to the public, number one. Number two, rules don't trump laws. And here in Washington State, RCW 28A640020-1C specifically says that we must segregate bathrooms in our schools and locker rooms to prevent violence against women. So our state Human Rights Commission has violated the law, and now Obama is violating the law. And it's interesting that these are only applying one way, and I think we need to call these folks on it. We absolutely do, because it's just going to, I think, continue to get worse if we don't. I mean, this is really lawlessness. Let's call it what it is. Also, on the national front, the Council of American Islamic Relations found, as a matter of fact, in law in the Holy Land Foundation trial by a federal judge to be a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, is standing trial for a massive fraud and cover-up perpetrated against hundreds of victims. Literally, this trial is going on, and the Clarion Project brought this to my attention. Thank you for all the great work they're doing. But just one more reason that the Council of American Islamic Relations should not be trusted by anyone. On the regional front, God and Country Celebration starting tomorrow, June 24th through the 26th, up in Marble, Washington. Going to have legislators from all over the western United States, including Nevada, Idaho, and Washington, there discussing how you can get involved in the network and how you can help fight back and make freedom a reality and make freedom happen in the western United States. Also on the regional front, July 20th in Missoula, Montana, at the federal courthouse at 12 o'clock, Joe Robertson is going to be having a hearing, and we are going to be standing there in Missoula in support of Joe Robertson. And I think all of you that can make it should try to make it over there to Missoula, Montana. And for those folks that have relatives in Montana, please let them know about this July 20th at the federal courthouse, 12 o'clock. Also on the regional front, the Socialist Review debunked in their article claiming that the rape of a five-year-old in Idaho that was reported across the country, that most of those stories were false. Well, it's actually not true. Yes, they were Muslim. Yes, there was a sexual assault against a five-year-old. Yes, they urinated on her, which is horrible, horrific. Yes, they were from Iraq and Sudan, and yes, they were refugees. And that happened. And yes, there was a delay in that information coming out. So the Socialist Review had this article trying to say these reports are false. It's just not true. They were trying to say that they tried to glom onto the fact that some people said these were Syrian refugees instead of Iraqi or Sudanese, but the main body of the articles were true. But they tried to say, well, these articles are false because they said Syrian. Well, and this is the kind of stuff that happens. This is disinformation to cover these types of things up. And the Socialist Review got caught and actually got exposed nationally by WorldNet Daily for that now discredited article. Unreal. Just unreal. The stuff's going on. Also on the regional front, the Bureau of Land Management has formed a new security and intelligence post. Some people are saying, well, that's just one person. It never is with the bureaucracy. They formed this new intelligence security post. They're going to backfill it with all kinds of money and all kinds of bureaucrats. So this is a new division of the BLM regarding security and intelligence. I think we really need to watch this stuff, because ultimately what it's doing is creating an army within these bureaucracies. Something even by federal statute shouldn't be happening, because federal statute says that they need to rely on local law enforcement for any enforcement actions that they're doing to the greatest extent possible. Also on the regional front, Washington State getting a D+ for corruption. And yes, that is true. They got a D+ for corruption. You can start page it and find out. But not much needs to be said, I guess, more about that. Also on the regional front, kindergartners going to be taught gender expression in 2017. OSPI sent an email to legislators across the state saying that it is a local school district decision to teach gender identity and gender expression, especially at that grade level. And therefore, every parent listening, you should be down at your school district demanding that they don't teach that and getting them on the record of what their plans actually are. Moving on to the local front, Spokane Police Department, a 600% increase from 2012 to 2013 in civil asset forfeiture money. And even greater, actually, since then. Well, there's a lawsuit going on alleging some misappropriation of those funds, but the fact of the matter is civil asset forfeiture should be done away with in its entirety. Literally, folks, if you don't know what this is, it's property that is seized, okay? Whether there is probable cause or not, I want to be very specific, whether there is probable cause or not, that is seized because someone is arrested and they think that the property may be related to crime. And literally what happens in court is you will see the city of Spokane versus $534.65, or the city of Spokane versus a red Camaro, or the city of Spokane versus whatever piece of land. They don't even name a person in it. And civil asset forfeiture is a ridiculous notion that actually started in the 1980s, unfortunately under Ronald Reagan, actually. And just something we need to do away with because it's unconstitutional. And not to mention any misappropriation of funds that need to be investigated. Also on the local front, Steve McLaughlin, as I've been mentioning, running for lands commissioner, a terrific candidate, going to be at La Bellevue Event Center out here in the valley off Barker Road and Appleway. And Steve is going to be there at 5:30 tonight. If you get a chance, you should make it. Ask him some questions and show him your support. Also, and lastly on the local front, I promised to talk about the Hulick case. This is the case of a person who was on a bicycle, didn't have a helmet on, and an officer who was going about, well, it depends on who you ask, but was speeding at a high rate of speed, some people say as high as 70 miles an hour, through a neighborhood without lights and sirens on. Now, I don't want to get into those details because there are some people that were proffering the theory that Hulick, he didn't hit the car. He didn't hit the bumper. He actually just stopped and then flipped over his handlebars. The problem with that is, and by the way, I've investigated collisions for over 15 years in my own private practice, especially the relationship between injuries and impact. And his injuries were wildly inconsistent with just being pitched over handlebars and landing on a street. There was massive trauma and bruising to the rest of his body. Everybody seemed to be focusing on what happened to his head, but the rest of his body was bruised and traumatized horribly. And it was just wildly inconsistent with being pitched over the handlebars. And then they tried to say that the DNA that ended up on the bumper was transferred there. And the fact of the matter is that such DNA transfers, other than from an impact, are exceedingly rare and usually only in low or no speed collisions, because somebody will fall down, then they will put their hand on a bumper to get up. In this case, he was actually thrown away from the vehicle. And so there's a lot of controversy over that, but I think that one thing is very clear. Dr. Jared Carter did a great job, and he should have been brought in earlier by our sheriff. And this wildly ridiculous theory about him not hitting the bumper, that alone should have brought in an independent investigation earlier. That alone. And it's just a matter of people that know what they're talking about, that have investigated collisions. I've talked to several people and they said they agree with me. There's no way that those injuries were consistent. So we're going to keep our eyes on the Hulick case and bring you more as we find out more. But that today is the briefing. And remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for Patriot Radio. Please go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And remember, this is a listener-supported show. And if you want to support the show, go to VoteShea.com. That helps us stay on the air. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce a good friend of mine, Nick Richardson. He is the founder of a great veterans organization here in Spokane. And I got to tell you something, we need more veterans organizations that are legitimate and are actually on the ground making things happen. Nick, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Thank you for having us out. I appreciate it.
So if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about your background and a little bit about the organization as well and what you do with it, and then we'll get into some more questions after that.
All right. So I'm a Spokane native, born and raised. Spent 4 years in the U.S. Army. I was a 13 Bravo field artillery. Loved it. Great job. After 4 years, I decided to get out, you know, to make things work better for my family. Spent some time overseas as a DOD Armed Guard supervisor, and then came home shortly after, did 6 years of college back-to-back. Got my master's degree done. Shortly thereafter, I hit a period of depression similar to what PTSD would be, except it wasn't. And Greater Veterans kind of started in my head back then, you know, as an idea to help veterans as well as their families kind of understand what we go through.
So I know that families have a real hard time with this kind of stuff because they don't know what's happening. They don't know what's going on. So can I tell, I guess, a little bit about what your organization seeks to do, and especially what it seeks to do in regards to veteran families as well?
All right. So what we're doing is Greater Veterans is going to be the organizational name that is in charge of the fundraising, the fun events. The actual vet center, which we plan on getting locally as well as nationally down the road, is going to be called the EVAC Center. That'll help out with a lot of different areas. As veterans, when we hear the term EVAC, it perks our ears. So EVAC will stand for Every Veterans Assistance Center. And what we're going to do is we're going to have a cafe, bistro, lounge rec area, auditorium for fundraising, concerts, special events, holiday meals, etc. A gym, so we, you know, healthy mind, healthy body concept. Service dogs. We have Operation Dog Tag that's going to partner with us and have space in our facility, as well as state and federal offices to help with filing of benefits.
So, and especially regarding veterans benefits, you know, there's been a lot out there with the Veterans Administration and some of the problems with the Veterans Administration, but also I've heard personally from a lot of veterans, they don't know what actually all is out there. And when they do know what all is out there, all the paperwork gets really confusing. They don't even know how to fill it out or what to do. How are you guys going to help out in that vein?
We're going to bring in experienced claim officers first and foremost. I mean, there's a lot of fly-by-nighters out there. Personally, I have my claim. You know, I know it's kind of taboo to say who's doing my claim, but I have Sherry Knox at the Valley Vet Center personally handling mine. A lot of the paperwork's easier than it used to be. Back even 10 years ago, 5-6 years ago, there was a lot more to it. It's a longer process. Now it's much shortened, and it's tough, you know, for a lot of us, especially males that are brought up, you know, in the Army, the Marine Corps, the tougher jobs in the military of, you know, don't be private profile. Don't be weak. Don't file a claim. You know, you fight that urge, but then you think, you know, this pain's going on. This is real. It's military related. I got to take care of myself, you know, for my family, for my community, et cetera.
So, you know, how do you bridge that gap? You know, there's a, there really is a, and rightfully so among warriors, the mentality of you just don't go get help unless you absolutely critically have to go get help. And a lot of veterans, I think, you know, shy away from help also because they're afraid that maybe their firearms rights might be implicated and those kind of things. How do you see helping veterans through those obstacles of, you know, and getting past really, frankly, what is pride, getting past the pride and getting help when they actually need it?
I'd say first and foremost, identifying what the need actually is and why the need exists. I know people personally that have taken PTSD money, so to speak, not even necessarily because they're in the PTSD boat as much as, you know, they don't have a job, they're having a hard time, you know, getting past the stereotypical, oh yeah, you served in combat, you know, veteran deal that some employers frown upon. So I think that's the first and foremost, you got to bridge that gap. The other area too is getting help sooner than later. I mean, if you wait until an injury goes from kind of painful to, you know what, painful, then that's going to, of course, affect things as well.
Well, let's talk specifically about PTSD and kind of the subject around PTSD, because that is an injury that is very difficult for a lot of people to talk about. There are so many conflicting opinions on it, so many different thoughts about it, so much misinformation out there about it. What has been your experience dealing with people that have suffered from PTSD, and how is Greater Veterans going to, you know, help on that specific issue? Which I think, again, a lot of people are really afraid to say anything about it because they think it might implicate their firearms rights.
Again, that goes back to, you know, the services we're going to offer. As the Crem 2 news story I said there, and I'll say it again here for everyone to hear, we're approaching this with a more meats and potatoes self-service, get the family involved, you know, blue-collar approach as opposed to a see a shrink, eat a pills approach. And, you know, everyone has different levels of it that has it. Some of us may have it and not want to admit it or not even realize it. So identifying key, I guess, struggles, whether they're mental or physical, as a result of combat, as a result of training. You and I were both combat arms people. You know, we're trained fight, 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 kill, relax. So, you know, I know to this day I have issues with my blood pressure personally. So my German Shepherd puppy he helps me, you know, relieve stress. So does working out, which honestly I'll say it here too. I need to get in the gym more myself. Not like, you know, the shape I was in before, but I need to get there again. And I think that sort of thing helps too.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And especially, you know, there's been a lot done recently using animals to help veterans deal with coming back and reintegrating into society. It's interesting. I was told that the Roman legions actually would give, I think it was like 120 acres or something like that, to centurions when they came back home, basically told them, you got your land, but, you know, don't come back into town very often kind of thing. Because there was this problem with reintegration. How do you see, especially on the animal side, that working? And are there any programs here in Spokane regarding that specific, I wouldn't call it a treatment, but that specific approach to dealing with veterans reintegrating into society?
Yeah, there's a couple programs, actually. First and foremost, Operation Dog Tag. He does a great job. He works primarily with combat veterans. But we're in discussions with him to work with other veterans, your MST survivors, which we can talk about in a minute. Veterans that just have a hard time acclimating back to society, because once you serve, you get out, nothing's ever the same again. You see society different. You see people different. I tell people all the time where I work, you know, even the person in your unit you trust the least, you still trust more than the average civilian, because at least that person knows what you've been through. So I say Operation Dog Tag first and foremost. There's also, I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but there's an agriculture program taking off where a lot of local farmers are teaching veterans how to raise their own crops and use that as a means. I use music personally, helps me as a release. That's something I've started doing recently. We're currently working on a Veterans Day concert with a couple veteran artists, Pete Scoble, who's a former Navy SEAL. We're trying to get him as our headliner. Joey James, Navy veteran, country singer. TC, Thomas Chavez, who owns The Pin, which is a local venue, was kind enough to let us use the venue to put on the concert. So I don't know. I let myself go with, you know, not only the dog side of things, but also the music. It takes your mind off of what's bothering you and forces you to, you know, change the channel.
You know, when I first came back from Bosnia, actually, that's exactly what I did. I taught myself how to play the guitar as a way to just kind of, you know, calm my mind and reintegrate and really kind of refocus my life, actually, as well. What was your experience, you know, from the military, and if you can share a little bit, maybe some stories of people that have talked to you about their experiences coming back. I'll tell you, when I got out, I was on the plane flying back to the United States. I remember vividly how much Americans complain. That was what stuck out in my mind, and I thought, wow, you know, it was it was a different world, completely different world, and it was almost just detached from reality. What I was witnessing, that these folks were complaining so much and had all these blessings, it was just detached from reality. So, if you could tell a little bit about your experience.
Well, I didn't go to Iraq or Afghanistan. I'll say that openly and honestly, but I did do a combat tour in Kosovo. And when you go to a third world country like that and you come back here and you hear people complain about, you know, a job that wasn't supposed to be a career, not getting $15 an hour, or you hear them about not getting this or not getting this, but yet you go to these third world countries and you see those people work 2 and 3 and 4 jobs just to make ends meet, you know, you kind of get a lack of appreciation for certain people that way. The other thing too, you're set to one standard, you know, you do certain things a certain way. There's a method to your madness, so to speak, and you get in the civilian world and a lot of it's just like cooking spaghetti, you know, throw a noodle at the wall and hope it sticks so you can say it's done sort of thing. And, you know, it's tough. You know, I'm fortunate to have a lot of great people. You know, more towards the end of my military career, first sergeant, now he's Sergeant Major Grinston. He's in charge of the Big Red One. Proud to say I served with him. Great guy, great leader. He'll be Sergeant Major of the Army one day. So it's, you know, awesome to say I know someone like that. But I also struggled when I got out. Right after I got out, Stop Loss, Stop Movement came out. And one of the soldiers that was in my squad in Kosovo, he passed away as a result of an IED. His name was Nicholas Zangara. And, you know, I didn't realize how I felt about the situation until a few months after I got out. The wife and kids and I were moving into a new place in Germany, and she handed me a picture of him, and I cried like a baby. And, you know, I still get a little bit choked up talking about it because, you know, on one side, as a leader, as you know, you think if I would have been there, it would have been different. And on the other side, you think if you would have been there, it might have been you. And you don't know how to feel about that. And I struggled with it with, you know, still to this day.
You know, I remember coming back to, now this was before 9/11, and we actually wore dress greens back then when we traveled. And I remember people looking at me a little weird. Nobody wanted to talk to me, you know. And then after 9/11, and particularly after the Iraq War, there was kind of a big turnaround, especially regarding the public, and just kind of more of an appreciation of military men and women and their service. What have you heard about that, number one? Number two, did you experience any of that yourself?
Honestly, you know, I've experienced both sides of it, you know, the good thank you for serving and the, you know, extreme opposite as well. And then, you know, of course, like we talked earlier about the PTSD, people thinking that you're nuts because you did serve. And I tell people, you know, I would rather be peaceful. It's much easier to be that way. But if you force me to go back into the warrior mindset, you're the one that's going to regret it, not me, because I'm trained not to regret it. And, you know, I've seen both sides of it. Recently, this past week, I was the guest speaker for the Vietnam Vets of America, who are also another group I'm working with on this. They're the only congressionally mandated veteran nonprofit out there. And hearing some of those guys' stories and experience is another little, I guess, can of gas on my fire to get greater veterans up and running, not only locally but nationally, because our veterans deserve what they get. When you sit and think, they say roughly 7% of us have, will, or are serving, and say you're generous with your numbers, that means roughly 90% of the population has no idea what's going on. Why don't we deserve our VA care? Why don't we deserve this? You know, when you talk about the VA and you go back and look at their mission statement page, you know, you can provide some more insight into this, you know, with your legal experience than I can. But the mission statement has never been updated since the Civil War times, where it says to take care of or to provide lifelong medical care to veterans and on both sides and their families. And, you know, most of us are just asking for care for us and they want to charge us. You know, I question the legality of that often. You know, you serve your country. Shouldn't you be taken care of after you serve?
Well, I think it's a cost. It's a cost that should be thought about ahead of time. You know, all the physical ailments from people. I know Vietnam veterans who auto rotated in helicopters, crashed in airplanes, did all kinds still survive, but that takes a huge toll on your body, and not to mention running with rucksacks on and boots and all the other things that, you know, you do in the military and especially in the Army. I don't know what the Marines do, but in the Army we do that. And it takes a huge toll on your body. And so the deployment of troops overseas into places that are not sanitary, which are war zones that have all kinds of chemicals and other exposures that are going on over there, it seems like something that we should actually talk about before deploying folks overseas. It's a cost that should be thought about ahead of time. And I completely agree with you. I mean, the military service is everything. Is everything that entails going and putting yourself in harm's way overseas and all the after effects from that. And it's interesting with firefighters and police, this has already been recognized. But it seems like with soldiers, it's kind of always going to be a constant fight.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. You know, it's something we need to look at. I mean, you train people for war, not peacetime. Take the college bill, the college fund, the GI Bill, and the post 9/11 bill. Me personally, I was never told once I went to college to put any of that money away, for example. And as of now, I have $70,000+ in a degree that doesn't really get me a job that pays that well. And that's something they don't tell us about either. They make you, you know, think, okay, you get this education for free for serving. You don't get that. You look at Revolutionary War times, if you joined the Continental Army, you got 13 acres, I believe it was, for free. You just had to pay a small tax or tariff on it. And nowadays, you just basically, you get to say you served, you know, you get a little sticker basically. And, you know, it's kind of sad when you look at other world issues going on, how the refugees get everything for free, how this group gets everything for free. But those of us that ensured everyone's freedom get very little, and I'm not demanding it. I'm just saying, you know, a little bit of help would be nice once in a while.
Well, right. I mean, and that's again goes back to the, you know, warriors don't like asking for help, and we just don't like asking for help. But those things that you were touching on, those are all parts of reintegration. You know, giving land, allowing veterans the opportunity to have a transition time that is paid for. Those are all things that are good for reintegration. And one of the biggest ones is jobs. It was interesting. I talked to my father. He came back from Vietnam, and nobody wanted to hire him because in that time, there was quite a bit of tension in society, and I think there really still is. How is this Greater Veterans going to help on the job front, number one, and also some of these other interesting programs that are out there with providing land, or at least providing loans to buy land, and then also training to become farmers, orchardists, vintners, all the different things that we have here in Washington State?
Well, I mean, the number one thing, like I said, I believe firmly in small business. Small business builds a community and, of course, a country. Anytime America has done good financially, it's been because small business was doing great. When we've done bad, it's been because, you know, small business, of course, has done bad. So part of that is helping veterans create their own businesses. A lot of us are ambitious, but we suppress it. You know, I was leery to step into doing this because I knew what it was going to entail, the cost my family was going to pay for me doing this, the cost I'd pay personally. But then I decided, you know, selfless service, courage, integrity, those are all part of, you know, the leadership acronym we get taught when we first go in the Army. And I believe in those things wholeheartedly. That's why, you know, I support who I support, whether it be politically, personally, et cetera. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to get veterans such as yourself, such as Matt Crotty, guys like that, you know, that have achieved success to come in and speak to our guys to motivate them, hopefully down the road, maybe even a Marcus Luttrell, who knows, to motivate our guys and gals and their families to go out and achieve greatness, which is where our motto kind of comes in, is we want you to be the best you can be, not only for you, for your family, for the community, for the country. And that's going to be one of our key elements in giving back. Every time we do a concert, I want to do giveaways. You know, I'm not doing this for personal gain or profit. I'm doing it because I ask myself, if not me, then who? Who's going to step up? Who's going to carry the torch? I don't want our guys ending up like the Vietnam vets. And, you know, some of them have done good and some of them have done real bad. But I think as veterans, we need to take care of our own, and it's time that we start doing so.
And I think, too, you know, transferring skills. And by the way, Matt Crotty and I actually went to school together at Gonzaga, went through ROTC together, and we're on the Ranger Challenge team that won the championship. He is a really, really good man. And I think that, you know, we share the idea that you have to be able to help veterans transfer their skills into the private sector. And a lot of times we don't even know, I didn't even know how to translate, you know, being in the infantry to, you know, being in regular life, you know, management skills. How does all that stuff transfer? What is your take on that? And also, you know, how are there any organizations locally that are actually helping veterans to do that?
Spokane County Vet Services, they're making an attempt at doing it, and there's other organizations out there trying, but to the best of my knowledge, I would say no. I think we're probably going to be the first that is not only going to make a hard-fought attempt, but also succeed and break that wall. You know, I was always taught growing up in high school, I went to Cheney and I went to Ferris for a year, you know, that resume writing and job skills and bullet points and all that stuff's the key. But, you know, if you're too strong of a leader, you know, there's the reality an employer might not hire you. They might fear that you're more qualified than them. That's a reality. So the key is, in my opinion, before you start college or a trade school, identifying a job that realistically will be there and, you know, something that you're going to want to pursue as a career. Because, you know, even with myself, since I got out of the Army, the longest I ever worked anywhere was 2 years, because you get to a certain level, you can't progress anymore. Or you start to realize this employer isn't what you thought they were, the job wasn't. And, you know, the Army kind of, for me, set the standard high. It's the gold standard. And then now everything else is just second best. And that kind of is hard for me to stay on track that way, personally.
I agree. This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with Nick Richardson from Greater Veterans, a new veterans organization here in Spokane, really seeking to fill the gaps for veterans, especially in reintegration back into society and being all-encompassing in their approach of how they talk to veterans and get them to be back in normal and progressive, and I use progressive in the right sense of the word, productive society. There's really, you know, when I had a lot of soldiers contact me after I came back from Iraq, and they said, hey, I just want to have a normal job again. I don't want to have to go out and try and convince people that my skills in the military are going to switch over. And it's interesting, the trucking industry really recognizes the value of veterans. They've hired a lot of veterans because they understand, you know, they did maintenance schedules. They were, you know, very regimented and disciplined in those things. But other industries really don't. I mean, there's a lot of soldiers that have had a lot of problems, at least in this area, you know, getting a, quote, normal job. You know, as far as your organization is concerned, Nick, how best do you think veterans can actually set themselves up for success if they are going in for an interview, if they are going to maybe even be starting their own small business because they've tried the interview process and going to find a job and have been unsuccessful in doing so?
It's like that old saying, you know, the man in the mirror sort of deal. You got to kind of, I guess, be honest with who you are and what you're about. Because at the end of the day, if you make six figures a month, six figures a year, or $6 a year, if you can't look at yourself in the mirror and be proud of what you're doing, your success is going to, I guess it's not going to happen, to put it bluntly. Take my background. I got a master's in criminal justice and done a lot of that type of stuff. Worked at a prison down south for a little bit. You know, a lot of us, in my opinion, as veterans, especially combat arms jobs, we're better qualified to be law enforcement than a lot of local law enforcement as well as federal are, because we understand the rules of engagement. We understand how to use our voice, our body tone, our body language to de-escalate a situation instead of, oh crap, they're bigger than me or they made me mad, let me draw a taser or a gun.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. You bring up a really good point, because I think that gets lost on a lot of people, that we've actually lived that. I mean, you have to make split-second decisions based on limited information and do the best you can under that circumstance. And you get attuned to preventing confrontation, to preventing escalation. I think it's a really, really good point. Well, if people want to get a hold of you and they want to find out more about Greater Veterans and maybe get involved, where can they go?
We have a Greater Veterans Spokane Facebook page. I'll put it out there. I don't care. I'll put out my cell phone number. It's 509-953-3515. Leave me a message. Text me if I miss your call. This Saturday, the 25th at Spokane Trail Rides, we're putting on a barbecue starting at 4 p.m. We're going to have the local band Armed and Dangerous. They do classic rock, kind of, I don't know how to explain it, like Motley Crue, Lynyrd Skynyrd, kind of that genre of music they're playing out there. There'll be some other vet organizations such as the VVA, Operation Dog Tag, a few others that I haven't confirmed should be there. So come on out, meet me in person. I'll be more than happy to shake your hand and do what I can.
Right on. So who else is backing Greater Veterans? I mean, what kind of support have you received? What kind of response have you received in the community?
Well, in the community, it's, you know, it's a slow process. Obviously, I met with you in person. Kathy McMorris Rogers and her husband, Brian, who's a Navy vet, like what we're doing. Met with her new district manager, Tracy Couture, recently. Very nice gal. I've met with Amy Smith and Patty Murray's office. I have a letter from Mayor Condon endorsing me. Chuck Elmore, who is also a board member from Spokane County Vet Services, their director. Molly Trotter from CREM 2. Addie Hatch from The Spokesman gave me a little tiny article, so that helped a little bit. You know, obviously the front page would do a lot more, but Molly Trotter's been great using social media to help, you know, get more attention to us. And then honestly, you know, not to sound arrogant or anything, but a lot of my own blood, sweat, and tears on social media have helped. I've reached out to a lot of veterans through social media. One, Liz Loris out of Oregon. She's an Army vet herself. You know, Chris Peronto from 13 Hours, he's on my Facebook. I've sent him video on what we're doing, and he likes it. Mike Ritland from Warrior Dog Tricos International, I've sent him stuff. You know, and that's the main thing, you know, just using the music, using the media, and using the fellow vets that have a little bit more connections to get involved in this. I also met with John A. Drain, who's a local innovator, I guess is what he calls himself. He just recently made bulletproof blinds. He's got the bulletproof ammo deal below your couch. He's been on Doomsday Preppers. Nice guy. Melissa Jensen, who's his girlfriend. She does a lot of veteran stuff. She knows Matt best, a lot of the guys at Article 15 Clothing. So I've just been reaching out to those guys, you know, because they've achieved the success already. They're at the peak. So, you know, as the young guy, even though I guess I'm older than some of them, you know, reaching out, trying to get something going, you know, I need to know what works the best I can and get support where I can. You know, we got to watch each other's six out there as well as we did in the military and learn from their mistakes and make a few of my own and try to limit that, of course, and just go forward.
Well, let's talk about that. What would be your message to the younger veterans that are out there right now?
Don't give up. You know, I read a book, you know, by Mark Owen, you know, one of the Navy SEALs on the Bin Laden mission, you know, No Easy Day. I'm sure you've read it as well. And it says the only easy day was yesterday. And, you know, that's something I say to myself a lot. I've also been told by people, you know, don't let your reach exceed your grasp. And when I first heard that, I thought, you know, what's that even mean? And then I thought, you know what it means? If you want to increase what you can grab, increase your reach, you know, increase how you're doing things. Look at what's productive versus not productive. Don't give up. Yeah, there's going to be days out there that suck. But, you know, it's like we said in the military, embrace the suck. You know, you got to get used to it happens. I mean, even you have bad days. And why are you going to let that beat you? You know, if I recently read about the, I'm bad with names, I apologize, but the quadruple amputee veteran that was on the crisis line forever and ended up deciding to shoot himself, and he may or may not pull through. I hate hearing stories like that. I mean, they deeply anger me. And that's why we as veterans not only got to embrace each other's organizations that are true, legit organizations, but also be there for people. If, you know, I give older vets at the retirement home my wife works to rides to the VA once in a while. Just do that. Be there for each other. If someone needs to call you at midnight, you know what? You'll get enough sleep when you're dead. You know, why not give a few minutes of your time to help somebody? I mean, I would rather know that I help someone make the decision not to do something bad as opposed to doing something bad. And that's what we need to do. You need to embrace the, you know, the basic human being qualities that we all have to help each other. That's what it's all about in the end.
I really think that you just hit on something that is so important. You know, there's a lot of Christian, this is American Christian Network, a lot of Christians listening. And you know what? It is an inconvenience to be a Christian. It is an inconvenience to love other people. It is an inconvenience to love your neighbor. It's an inconvenience to take those phone calls in the middle of the night. But you know something? Those are the things, being inconvenienced yourself can actually save somebody's life, or maybe even speak into their life in a way that completely changes their direction, and they end up being a, you know, the next Einstein or something. I mean, it can have such a dramatic impact, just that one interaction when maybe, yeah, it was real late at night, or maybe it was not at the right time. That one interaction can change somebody's life, change the course of the world, for that matter.
Well, and it can. I mean, it goes without saying, but like, you know, these Vietnam vets, you know, if you see one as a veteran, do you need to sit there and tell another veteran thank you for your service? Absolutely not, because you served too. But when I can, I always try to. You know, I saw a Vietnam vet a few weeks ago. I forgot where I was at, and I said, hey, thank you for your service. And, oh, right on, you were an Army guy too. So was I. And, you know, I've seen different Special Forces people, different SEALs that I've met, you know, outside of work and different things like that. And, you know, I don't know, more kids nowadays, more of us need to idolize those people, need to, you know, thank them for what they did, because, you know, you pay a price for serving, whether it's physical or mental. You don't get out, you know, unscathed, so to speak. And then, you know, going back to the, you know, the Christian side of things, you also pay a price morally, because if you're to follow scripture exactly to the T, a lot of stuff we get asked to do compromises that on a daily basis while we serve.
Very well put. Well, Nick, if you could, again, if any veterans want to get a hold of you, find out more about Greater Veterans, what you guys can help them with. Also, maybe they want to get involved. Where can they go, and how can they contact you?
Greater Veterans Spokane on Facebook or on my personal cell. You're more than welcome to call me day or night. If I can't answer, I'll get right back to you. It's 509-953-3515.
Right on. Nick Richardson, Greater Veterans, thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate the work you're doing. Love to have you on again, and always an open door with me. Anything that you need, please let me know, and just appreciate your passion for helping those folks that have served our country.
Well, I thank you for continuing to be the leader you are outside the military, as well as a representative. I appreciate everything you're doing for our country, and thank you.
Nick Richardson, thanks again. We're going to be posting some more about Greater Veterans on the Patriot Radio Facebook page as well. And folks, like I was just talking about, if you can't be inconvenienced to help somebody, then somebody can die as a result of it, or maybe their life goes in the wrong direction because you didn't step in. And as Christians, we've got to get back to loving our neighbor that way. We've got to get back to being inconvenienced, doing things that maybe we wouldn't normally do, maybe stepping outside of our comfort zone. But like Nick said, and he was quoting a Navy SEAL, there is no easy day. The only easy day was yesterday. And I think we really need to get back to that as Americans, so we can really help folks out. And, you know, veterans reintegrating into society, it is not easy to go from a combat zone where you have a weapon on your hip, you're on 100% alert, maybe you're going to get shot at, maybe you avoid an ambush, and then you come right back to the United States. In my own personal experience, both times I was overseas, in Bosnia and in Iraq, literally, in fact, in Iraq, as we were driving to the airport, a couple of little kids ran out into the middle of the road, stopped our truck, which is very dangerous for us to stop. but we were not going to run over a couple of kids coming out in the middle of the road. And they stopped and they pointed down the road where an ambush was. And they actually stopped us from running right into an ambush on my way to the airport. Within 16 hours, I was back in the United States of America. And you want to talk about surreal. Both times, that is surreal going from that environment to back to polite society. And I think we really need to recognize that. It's not wrong or bad that veterans need time to reintegrate. It's just a fact of life, and I think we need to help them do it. We need to be there if they have any problems. Well, I want to switch real quick and give you an update on the Brexit going on in England, since that is all over everything right now. It looks like, and again, Nigel Farage has said that he thinks that it's going to be so close, but he thinks that the Leave campaign may have lost. And his quote is, "Win or lose this battle, we will win this war," which means that they aren't going to give up. This referendum is probably going to keep coming back and back and back again, as Nigel has been a staunch defender of national sovereignty. And I think we have a lesson to learn here in the United States. We have got to remain a sovereign country. And any schemes for a North American Union or whatever else might be schemed up here just isn't going to end well. And we're seeing what's happening in Europe with serious economic problems. You just cannot integrate on that level, number one. And number two, decentralization, I think, is freedom. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening to Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you. And also remember this, defend freedom locally every chance you get. And if you get a chance, come up to Marble this weekend. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.